And we are learning Masechet Sanhedrin on page Daf Kaf Gimel Amud Bet 23b2. We're learning laws, procedure in the Beit Din. So let's refresh ourselves as to where we're holding, what we're talking about. Important. We're learning Gemara. Gemara's like building a house. Try and jump in on the middle and start building a floor. The floor looks very nice, but it's floating in the air. Like, how did it get here? What's it standing on? It's going to collapse. You really need to follow the foundations and you build up the first floor, the second floor. So you need to go back to the Mishnah to ground yourself. Where are we holding? What are we actually talking about? How did we get to where we are now? Just jump in and say, we're talking about witnesses. Very nice, but I've got nowhere to put it. Also, my brain is structured that way. My brain is also structured in a tree-like formation. You've got roots, and like a family tree. You've got roots, and then they branch this way, then branch, and then the leaves come off. If you start looking at the leaf without remembering that the branch came from the roots, which came from the trunk, which came, right? So you kind of lose the thread. So it's useful to make sure that your brain, all those connections are connected. You don't just have bits of information floating in free air, but actually connected to a source. You know where they're coming from. So it's good to start at the foundation. Where we're holding, we're talking about Sanhedrin, Yofi. Sanhedrin is the laws of the court system, Yofi. That's a good next, that, right? After courts, where do we get to? So now we're talking about how you make a court. That was the first thing. How you actually get the court together. Who picks the judges? Right, so now you've got the judges. Now we're talking about witnesses. Right? Who chooses the witnesses? Whether they're passel, whether they're good.
Elvis defined passel.
Passel, we still don't know. We still have defined passel. Apparently we don't need to define a passel at this point.
I mean, for an English equivalent would be what?
Invalid.
Invalid.
Invalid. But in terms of what it takes to be invalid, we don't yet know.
No, no.
That's a detail on the branch of invalid, which is going to come later. So far we've heard the word invalid, but we haven't actually fleshed it out. We're going to branch off later towards invalid and see what that meant.
The reason I ask is that somebody pops into the podcast and
they don't know
what the terms mean.
Okay. Right. So, we have been talking about we've been talking about the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah said, let's review our Mishnah. The Mishnah basically said like this. First rule of our Mishnah is, how do you pick the court? One litigant picks one judge, the other litigant picks the other judge, and the two of them pick a third. We're still not sure what the two of them meant, but final analysis is a dispute between Rabbi Meir and the sages. Rabbi Meir says that they both say that the judges pick the third, but Rabbi Meir would differ. Rabbi Meir said that the litigants have to agree. The judges pick, because the judge wants to know who he's going to be sitting with. And that was the rule we learned from Rabbi Huda, the name of Rab. The witnesses don't sign on a document unless they know who they're going to be witnessing with. And we learned that over also to judges. Judges have to pick their other judge. But we had a machloket in the Mishnah. The Mishnah had a machloket. Rabbi Meir says one thing, says this one picks, and the other one says no, the judges pick. So what was the difference? They both pick, but Rabbi Meir says the litigants have to agree with the judges pick. That was the first rule of the Mishnah. Next rule of the Mishnah, this one can disqualify that one's judge, and this one can disqualify that one's judge. What did it mean? We saw a few different meanings to what that meant. How do you disqualify a judge? So we saw that if he was not learned, right, the court's historia, but we challenged it until we came down to the rule which said, the machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in that section was regarding a publicly acknowledged expert. We said that the case of the publicly acknowledged expert who wasn't really an expert, that was the actual machloket between them. What was the difference? Rabbi Meir said, if they're not really an expert, even if they are publicly acknowledged, you can get rid of them. You can disqualify them on the grounds they're not experts. Chachamim said no, they're always considered to be experts, and you can't get rid of them, you can't disqualify them. So that was the Machloket in the second stage. Then we came to the third stage. Third stage was Rabbi Meir and the sages arguing again. The argument was whether or not you can disqualify witnesses. So the Mishnah says, this one can disqualify that one's witnesses, and this one can disqualify that one's. Rabbi Meir says. Achman says no, only if they're pasul or relatives. What are we arguing about? So, we said that initially, Reish Lakish tried to argue that the Mishnah was talking about a single witness. Although it says the word witnesses, it doesn't mean that, it means a single witness. This one can disqualify the other one's witness if there's only one of them. So we looked at that and we said, no, it can't be that. Eventually we said it can't be that because the wording of the Mishnah said witnesses, and we go with the wording of the Mishnah because it was exact. Because it said in one place judge in the singular and in another place witnesses in the plural, you can see that the Mishnah was being very careful in its chosen language, so you have to stick with the plural for witnesses. You can't say it meant a single witness. So we threw away Shlakisha. So then we came back and said, well, so what does the Mishnah mean? If it doesn't mean that, do we have another explanation? So we saw a couple of other explanations so far. The first explanation we saw was Rabbi Elazar, who said that we were talking about where he's not, where his father was a slave. And Rabbi Meir said, you can, the litigant can join with another witness, so there's two witnesses, to go against and knock out these witnesses. Not directly, because then they'd be partial in the case. But they can go against his father and say his father was a slave, and he can get knocked out automatically. He's not going against them directly. And therefore, Rabbi Meir allows that. Hachman said no. Hachman said, soft. At the end of the day, you're knocking out those two witnesses. That's considered to be partial. So you can't do that. So that was the Machloket in our Mishnah. That's the explanation of the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Elazar. Gemara wasn't satisfied with that in terms of the fact that it decided to bring other explanations too. It didn't knock out that explanation. It allowed it. But it also brought additional ones. Meaning, wasn't so 100%. If it was 100% clear that that was the way, that was the only way of understanding the Mishnah, and that was clear, we would have stopped there and moved on to another sugya. But the Gemara didn't. The Gemara said, alternatively, you can look at it a different way. So that's one possible option. All right, you can say that's the meaning of the Mishnah. Second meaning, we learned from Rav Dimi when he came from Babel. He said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that we're talking about the case of Chus. Huh? Came to Babylon from Eretz Yisrael. Right? So, and he brought a teaching from Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, this Mishnah, I'll explain to you what this Mishnah means. This Mishnah is talking about we have two sets of witnesses. And when you have two sets of witnesses, then we have a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim. This is what the machloket is. Rabbi Meir says, you can knock out one set. You can disqualify the first set. I let you. Why? Because you've got a second set. So I let the litigant be a witness against this first set. And I don't say he's partial in the case, because there's another set of witnesses. So it's not really affecting his claim. He's just getting rid of a bad set of witnesses, but it's not, he's got, his claim still stands, there's still a case that he has to argue. So we let him testify against this first set of witnesses because there's another set. Hachamim say no. The argument Hachamim say no, you can't go against this first set because it might be that the second set. Now, so what's, it's not the reason. So what's the difference between them? We said the difference between them is Rabbi Meir says, if you have two sets of witnesses, you have to also verify the second set too. You have to listen to the second set. You can't just have one set. Because you have to listen to the second set, so there's going to be another set of witnesses. Therefore, the first set doesn't really matter. you can go against them because you have to have the second set anyway. But Chachamim say, you know, you don't need to have it. If you've got two sets, you can decide not to have the second set. You've got one set of witnesses, that's enough. So because there's a possibility that you're not going to have the second set, so you can't knock out the first set, because that might be the only set you're ever going to have. And therefore, you are definitely partial in that case. So Chachamim say, for that reason, the litigant can't go against the first set. And that's why you have the Machloket in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, whether or not the litigant can disqualify witnesses. Tov. That's where, yes.
The question I have is, given the judges will be questioning the witnesses, wouldn't they knock out hostile witnesses just by questioning?
No. Not unless the witnesses agree that they're passel. We're not talking about the case. We're talking about the case where you need to bring proof. We're talking about a stand case. Witnesses, generally speaking, Jewish law will know the rules that they're not allowed to be relatives, and they won't come to. They won't come. They're not going to. They're not going to come to court unless they're lying, meaning unless they're not going to agree with the judges. So you need to bring two proofs against them. Or if they didn't realize and the judge says, are you a relative? And they say, yeah, I am. Is that not allowed? The judge says, no, it's not allowed. And they say, sorry, and they walk away. So we're not even talking, we're not even so irrelevant that we're not even talking about that situation. We're only talking about a situation where you have to end up bringing proof against them to get them out. That's the case of the Mishnah. If it's an open and shut case where you say, are you a relative? And they say, yeah. So, oh, sorry, bye, done. So it's not even something that's worth talking about on the page. So it has to be a case where there's a dispute that they want to be a witness, and you say no, and you have to bring proof.
Then how do you... Then they're denying that they're relatives.
Yes, and you have to bring proof that they are.
So how would you bring proof that they're denying the relatives?
Bring proof. Bring two witnesses in the family. Right? Then they could be next door neighbours. They could be other relatives. I'm his cousin. I'm his brother. I know who his relatives are. Right? You could do it. Okay.
I mean, you ask the cousin or your relative from this person. It's like when you go to the court.
Look, now the court believe him until you bring two witnesses and say that he's lying.
No, I say witnesses. They prove that they are not relative.
They don't have to prove, they just have to say.
Yeah, they ask.
But if that, yes, the judge asks him and says, are you a relative? He says no. Sure. But then, that's fine. But then if he brings two witnesses who says he is, so then they kick him out. Because they believe two witnesses against him.
Now, is it immediate relatives?
Yes.
So, like cousins?
They're fine. Lean Edda. I think it's just brothers, sisters, father, daughter, son. Right, immediate relatives, I think. Lean Edda.
But that'll be covered, right?
I don't know if we'll cover it directly. I don't know.
Okay.
We've got about another 100 deaths. Maybe it's going to be a mess.
Yeah,
maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, probably 100 deaths.
Hold that question for
page 170.
And we'll remember it. So, Rav Hashem, we'll get there. So, you see, remember 63 months ago when we looked at that question? It's Rav Hashem, not so long. Okay, so. Okay, so we got, so on 23b, we got to like towards the end of that first column on 23b, right? And that was the, where the Gemara just now explains there, Rav Dimi came. Let's just read from the Rav Dimi. Kiata Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Yochanan. When Rav Dimi came, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Machloket b'shtei kitot edim. What are we talking about? What's our Mishnah talking about? It's talking about a machloket between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim in the case of two sets of witnesses. The Rav Meir Savad Sarich Levarer. Rabbi Meir holds that you need to clarify, you need to substantiate the second set of witnesses. So there will always be a second set. If you bring two sets, you're going to have two sets. You need to substantiate the second set, and therefore he can allow you to get rid of the first. Rabbanan sabrei ein osar if ever rei, but Rabbanan hold chachamim. They say you don't need to substantiate the second set, and therefore, because you don't need to substantiate the set, you might not have the second set. You might only have one set of witnesses, so you certainly can't knock them out by their litigant. Aval, right. So the end of this statement from Rav Dimi is aval bekat echad, but with when you only have one group, divrei hakol ein yachol apostolim. But when you only have one group, they both agree that that the litigant can't be involved in disqualifying the witness. There's only one set.
So he would have to bring two additional witnesses to say that they're pasul or relatives.
Yes, not him. Even if he knows, he can't do anything about it.
Right, so
he needs to find two impartial witnesses to come and make that claim. Okay, so the Gemara continues.
Oh, Rashi.
Up till there, we're okay on Rashi. The Gemara continues and says, Amru lefanav Rabbi Ami v'Ravasi. They said before him, before Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi said. They asked the question, Ein sham ela katachad mahu. If there's only one set of witnesses, what's the case? Mahu. Gemara says, wait a minute. Didn't we just explain that? Ein sham ela katachad. There's only more than one set. V'amrinam, but we just said the end of what Rav Dimi's statement. Aval bevatachat divrei kol ein yachol posla. We just said. Rav Dimi said, and if there's only one set, everybody agrees you can't disqualify them. So why are you asking on what happens if there's only one set? Can you just hear what I just said, right?
Why was this thing brought up?
Why what?
Why was the question brought up?
So we're going to see now, because we didn't understand the question. They apparently said something obvious. They apparently said, wait a minute, what's the case of one set? But we just said what the case of one set is. And they say, no, this is not what we mean. Ella, rather, this is what we meant to say. That wasn't the question what we were meant to ask. We'll pause for a second and say, it's a very good question. Why wasn't it clear initially what they said? Or if it was clear, why does the Gemara need to explain the wrong question and then say, no, we didn't mean that, this is what we meant? Why not skip that bit where you say out the question wrong, and then just go to the correct bit, right? Rav Abi and Rav Asi came along, and this is their proper question. But the Gemara Dafka says, Rav Abi and Rav Asi came along and said, we have a question. And the Gemara says, that's your question? And they say, no, that's not the question. This is the question. And they re-explained it. But it's a question to it. Why did Gemara bother to tell you the wrong question and say, no, we didn't mean that. This is what we meant to say. I'm just throwing it out in brackets to realize that that's going on here. Just what the answer is, why is it a question for someone like Rav Yeshua Cohen to ask why the Gemara bothers to apparently say the mistake? Don't know, but it's just worth noticing.
That's why I'm saying, what does Rashi say? Because it's...
It happens often. It's not so uncommon. You often see that where they apparently ask a very simple, obvious question. And the Gemara says, hey, what are you asking that question for? Isn't it obvious? We just said that. And they say, no, I didn't mean that. I meant to ask it like this. Which is fair enough. But why bother with the first? Don't.
Uh-huh.
It's a common, though. I'm sure almost certain Rashi's not going to mention it because it's so common that it happens. But I don't know the reason why that happens. So there has to be a good reason why.
So does Rashi say anything?
No.
Okay.
Ah, Rav Elazar. Shalom, shalom. Baruch haba, Shem Hashem.
Yes, Ben Azmanim.
Okay, what, Ata or Anata?
Yeshiva.
Okay. So you were saying that there's a feeling of being in Bein HaZmanim. The yeshiva has a feeling of a bit more chilled, relaxed, half. It's not
what
full.
People do.
Yeah. Because they changed it. They said everyone should come, and then they said because they were going to pay people to come, but then Rav couldn't find funding to pay, so he said, you know what, you don't have to come. If you want to come, you can still come. So.
And
the war stopped. And the war stopped. Are we back on? I don't even know. They're fighting at the moment?
Oh, no.
They launched missiles.
Who? Them or us?
Hamas. We don't launch missiles.
Stopped? Mm-hmm. Oh, it stopped now.
Where did it stop? Where?
Last
no.
week.
No,
again,
15 minutes
on the south. Okay, they shoot. I don't know which.
But what do we do? They're shooting, we're just standing there waiting.
It looks like they're now the Saturday night. The killers, the Arabs, so called Palestinians, they play with Am Yisrael. Like,
what's it matter? What's it for?
Yeah. True. But
first, Israel should.
The game is now that in Hebrew you call it Michel Tatasha. They're not sent now, as far as I understand, to Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
So they know you.
So they're seeing the testing.
Ashkelon is
Yeah, we don't mind so much. It's only Ashkelon.
Tel Aviv.
According to the latest Twitter account from the IDF, we've had some action. They've, they weren't carbon bombing, unfortunately. But they did do a lot of bombing over the weekend.
We?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And then, according to the, there's a website listing all the rockets going off.
Yeah.
And I counted like 15, 20.
Yeah.
Just last night.
Oh. Tov. We should speedily destroy all our enemies. Hashem said.
It's just a little call for us to do the tshuva.
Hashem should destroy them with our help, not the other way around. I would say we should destroy them with Hashem's help. Say Hashem should destroy them with our help.
No, what we need to do is tshuva.
We have to make tshuva and then have some balance.
Which book? Kaf Gimel Amud Bet. I'd like to tell you where we are, but it takes about 20 minutes to catch you up to where we are. So we're talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. Witnesses. Rav Dimi. So, we're talking about this case in the mission. Rav Dimi says, I'll explain to you the case, Rav. I'm not going to explain what the case is. Case is where you have two groups of witnesses. Because you have two groups, you can knock out the first one, you can disqualify the first one. Right? Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Hachman says, you can't, because you might not have, group number two might not come. You might only end up with one, and therefore you can't knock out that one, because then, So, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi ask this question, and they say, why is there only one group? And the Gemara says, wait a minute, what if there's only one group? We just said, if there's only one group, everyone agrees you can't disqualify. So then they say, no, we don't mean that. Ella nimset kat shnia krovim upsolim. We mean, what happens if the second group is found to be relatives or pasul. So it turns out, retrospectively, after the case, that you only had one group. You thought you had two groups. But then when it comes to the second one, they get up on the stage ready to give their testimony. And it turns out, it doesn't really matter how it turns out, whether they agree, they remember, there's two witnesses against them. Whatever reason, it turns out that this second group of pasul. What happens now? Because now we only have one. So what we're talking about the case? We're talking about the case of Rabbi Meir. Mm. Rabbi Meir said that you can knock out the first group because you're going to have a second group, right? That was Rabbi Meir's explanation. He allowed you to disqualify the first group. He said there's going to be a second group, so don't worry about it. You're going to have a second group anyway.
What's disqualified?
To reject, to lefasel.
Lefasel.
Lefasel. Right? You can lefasel the first group because you've got a second group. But now what's happened is the second group comes along and it finds out that they're pasul. Right? He gets up on the stage and he says, it's okay that I'm his brother. And church is like, come on. It's like, oh, really? Oh, sorry. And they step down. And, oh, and suddenly there's no witnesses. Because you got rid of the first group. Rabbi Meir, you're sitting in Rabbi Meir's court now. You're not in Hachamim's court. Hachamim's court, they don't let you touch the first group anyway. But in Rabbi Meir's court, they do.
They didn't check before?
Apparently not. Apparently it turns out that there's two groups. So Rabbi Meir's court, right, they say two groups of witnesses. And the litigant says, oh, we've got two groups. Great, I can get rid of this first one. I know that he's a relative. And Rabbi Meir says, yeah, that's fine. There's another set coming later. You're off, you can get rid of this first one. First one, you're passel. Get out of here. Right, let's carry on with the case. Now, second group of witnesses. Oops, they're also passel. What happens to the first group? Now we've knocked out both. Now it turns out retrospectively that they were the only group. Because the second one were passel.
But if the first one's passel and the second one's passel,
we have got nothing. But the question is on Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir only let you disqualify the first group because he thought there was a second group that was kosher. So because he thought there was a second group who was kosher, you were allowed to go against the first set because you weren't partial, because they weren't the only witnesses in the case. But now it turns out they were the only witnesses in the case. So what do you do now? So that's the question of the Gemara. That's the question of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi when they say, what if there's only one group? So when they then have the right question, what if there's only one group? But it was in a scenario, wasn't the scenario that the Rav Dimi said. Rav Dimi said, if there's two groups, there's a mafoket, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Chachamim. And if there's only one group, they all agree you can't pass all them. Along comes Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi says, but what if there's only one group? And they didn't mean the first, what, there's only one group turned up at court. It meant, no, in this scenario, it turns out that there was only one group in retrospect. What does Rabbi Meir say about that? So that's the question that they had. So we didn't answer because we don't know. Right? We don't know what? It's a good question. I don't know. Well, Rabbi Meir might try and undo the whole thing you write. Bring back the first set. You're not allowed to apostle them. You may have to bring them back. Or he might say, there's two options. Either you have to bring back the first set and say, you're right, when I let you go against them, I thought there were two sets. But now I realize there's only one. So I agree that it is only one set. You can't go against them. So bring them back. You're not allowed to disqualify them. Or do you say, no, what's done is done. You can't bring them back. Now you've disqualified them. And now you've got a situation that, Tom, you haven't got a claim. You're right. Sorry. That's the luck of the draw.
So when you're disqualifying the first set, you're using one witness and the litigant.
Right.
So, aren't the judges questioning, or who's giving the information?
They're only being disqualified on the proof of two witnesses. That's how they're not being disqualified just by questions and answers. They're disqualified by bringing proof. I need proof against these witnesses that they're not valid.
So aren't the judges examining the witnesses against the two witnesses?
They're calling witness step one and two, so I know you do.
Okay. You have the litigant and another witness testifying against step one.
Step one, right.
Aren't the judges asking questions to the litigant and
the other witness
saying, why do you say that they're puzzled or...
Yeah, they have to bring proof. They're witnesses in a separate court. That's now like a mini court case against set one. Mini court case against set one. I'm bringing two witnesses to say you're not allowed to be witnesses. Judge is like, okay, fine, let's hear what you've got to say. So they have to stand up in the box and say, I know that he's his brother because I grew up next to them and lived with them for 20 years next door. And I know that's his brother. Or whatever his evidence is.
Right.
Or I'm the brother-in-law, and I know that that's his brother. I'm his brother-in-law. Come on, I know who he is. I was at his wedding. I was at my... So whatever it is, they have to stand up and say. And the judge says, okay, sounds good to me. So just give me some proof. Where did you know? What am I asking questions? You know, where's he live? Who's his brother? Who's his mother? What's the name of his dog? Tough. You're good. I believe you. All right, you're out of here. Judge here, the judges... The job of the judges is not to decide the evidence, it's to decide between the evidence, to hear the evidence. If the evidence sounds good, then that's good. They're not here to try and work it out themselves.
So if they have already disqualified set one.
Right, correct.
And then it turns out that set two is a puzzle.
Right, so that's the question now of the Gemara, what do you do?
The litigant had to bring in two additional witnesses to disqualify set one.
So it's a question, what do you do with set one? Because the two options, either you say what's done is done, we disqualified them, and therefore there's no. Or do you say, no, we wrongly disqualified them, we weren't allowed to disqualify them because it turned out there's only one, and therefore you have to bring them back because you as a litigant could not have testified against that set. Right? You did it wrongly. We let you, but now we realize that you shouldn't have done it. Or we say, no, at the time you testified, you were everything was good. There was another set waiting, and your testimony was good. We accepted it, we allowed it. Done. So that's the question the Gemara is, we're going to see the answer. But they don't know. Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi, they're sitting there listening to Rabbi Yochanan say, this is what Rabbi Meir, this is the machloket. Because you've got another second set. You can disqualify the first set. And they're sitting there scratching their heads and saying, well, wait a minute, what happens if it turns out that second set's no good? What do you do about the first? Right, so then Rabbi Yochanan's like, hey, good question. What do you do about the first? So the Gemara's going to answer. Tell us what to do in that situation. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mahu, right? Elamim set kachnia krovim upsolim. If it turns out that the second set are relatives of the pasul, Mahu, what's the answer? What do we do then? Amalahin. So Rabbi Yochanan said, don't worry, I have an answer for you. Rabbi Yochanan says back, Kva he'idu edim harishonim. Already they testified the first witnesses. And I just finished the Ika to Amrei, other people say, Amar Rav Ashi said, Kavaha Eidu Eidim Rishonim. Rav Ashi said the same thing. Witnesses already testified. So what does he say? So they say that the answer is, no, what's done is done. You're right. If Rabbi Meir would have known at the beginning that there was that second set weren't going to be passed, he would never let you testify against the one set. There's only one set. Everybody agrees with one set. You can't go against them. If you're a litigant. But in this case, there were two sets, and therefore Rabbi Meir does let you go against the first. Turns out that the second set are no good, what's done is done. Rabbi Yochanan says, what's done is done. They already testified, they knocked them out, turns out the second set is no good, so end of the claim, you haven't got a claim, unless you can bring proper witnesses. There's no claim here. That's the answer. Yeah. That is the so that up till there, as can, is the second proof or the second way of understanding the Mishnah. Let's just go back. Our Mishnah said, right? The Mishnah on the top of the page, Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph, 23a1, said. Second paragraph, if you're looking at the English in the Mishnah, the second paragraph. Zeh posel eidav shel zeh, v'zeh posel eidav shel zeh. This one can disqualify the witnesses of the other, and this one, this litigant, can disqualify the witnesses of the other. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's what Rabbi Meir says. Chachamim amrim, sages say, imatai, when are you allowed to disqualify witnesses? Bizman shemevi aleihem raya, only if you can bring proof, like two other witnesses. She'en krovim oposalim, that their relatives or pasul. Avalim hayu kashirim eina yochonim lepaslam. But if they're kosher, you can't disqualify them. So that's the Mishnah. And now we have two different proofs, two different explanations, what we said. We had the original one from Rabbi Elazar, and now we had a second one from Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Dimi, Rabbi Yochanan, the same, right? Two different proofs. Rabbi Elazar said, I'll tell you what it means. It means when he goes against the Abba, who's a slave, and the father's a slave, the litigant can knock him out. He knocks him out indirectly by going against the father. He doesn't go directly against the witness himself. That's what that little machloket means. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no. Rabbi Yochanan says, we're talking about the case of two sets. And if you've got two sets, you could go against the first set. And the litigant can witness against the witnesses himself. In that minor situation, and those are the two explanations of the Gemara.
Maybe proof the first
So he does. So that's the machloket. The Mishnah had a machloket. Now, Mishnah said, Rabbi Meir says you can, and the Chachamim says no. Only if you can bring external proof.
Huh?
He means two witnesses, two external witnesses, not the litigant. The argument is whether the litigant can be a witness. So Rabbi Meir says the litigant can be a witness against the fathers, and Hachman says no. If you want to go against the fathers, you need two other witnesses. Two other witnesses, not the litigant.
So then you can go.
And then you can go against the father. You could go against him himself. You don't even know you need to go. And that's Rabbi Elazar's explanation of the Mishnah. Rabbi Dimi says no, not that at all. That doesn't mention what it means. It means something different. Two cuts, two different groups. Okay, so we've got that. That's solid. That's good. So now the Gemara is going to say that second answer that you just brought about the two groups. Maybe we can say.
Oh, does Rashi say anything?
yeah, but it's very long. Somehow I'm going to attempt to go into it. It's a very long explanation, explaining of the. Yeah. There's a lot of Rashi on this page. Like this whole section at the bottom, that whole chunk is top. Anyway.
Shouldn't we cover it?
No.
Okay.
Not unless you want to spend. We can, but we're going to be stuck on it for. We can spend the next. It depends how long, but we can spend the whole lesson just going through a couple of rushes. Like an hour going through a couple of rushes. I don't think it's worth it. I think it's better to move forward. He'd already explained. Basically, he's explaining the way we've explained it. Go is Rashi. Right, just from the text, the few words in the text, you're not going to get there. You have to get the Rashi that's going to explain it. So when I go through the Rashi, it's stuff that we just explained it. So it's not going to be helpful to just go through Rashi's explanation, which is exactly what I've just said, because I've already given you the end game, the end proof. You know, I've just told you.
Okay.
So now we've got that second explanation. Gemara wants to say, maybe that explanation that you just brought about whether or not, what was the explanation? The difference between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim in that second explanation was actually based on something else. The difference between them was, one said, you have to substantiate the second set of witnesses, and the other said, no, you don't. You have to levarer otam. You have to see if they're telling the truth. If you say I've got two sets, then you have to bring them. You can't decide later, we'll just stick with one. If you said you have two, you have to bring them two. So Rabbi Meir says you have to bring both. And Chachamim say, no, you only have to bring one. Because of that, it meant that they had two different answers to this question of the witnesses. But that was their real argument. That was the real difference between them. So the Gemara wants to say that difference that you had between them about checking the second set, let's say that that comes from something else. Let's say that that argument, Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, about when you got two sets of witnesses and you need to bring the second or you don't need to bring the second, we see that in somewhere else. We have a different area, a different situation, where you also have that same argument. Something very similar between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim, also in a different case. What's that other case? So now we're going to look in the other case to see if it's the same idea or not. So the Gemara says, Neima de Plukta de Rabbi Meir de Rabbanan. Sorry, the Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Neima, let's say, or can we say, that Palukta is an argument Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Can we say that this argument that we just had between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim is the same argument that Rabbi had with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, otherwise known as Rashbag, it's easier to say, right? I'm Rashbag, so I'm going to call him Rashbag, right? That's his initials. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Right? So, can we say it's an argument between Rebbe and Rashbag? It's the same argument. The same as Rabbi Meir. The same. What? In what case was Rashbag and Rebbe arguing? So, Tanya, it taught in a Braita. We had a Braita about something completely different. So, a new situation. But let's see if it's the same argument. What's the situation? Haba lidon bishtar b'chazaka. Someone who comes lidon to litigate for a judgment. Bishtar u'b'chazaka, with a shtar and with a chazaka. So let's understand what these two things are. What's a shtar?
Document.
Shtar is a document. In modern Hebrew, you know what a shtar is in modern Hebrew?
Money.
It's a note. If you give a 50 shekel note or a 100 shekel note, it's called a shtar. Right?
But
a coin or a shtar?
But not only.
Also a document, a shtar.
Probably the ktubah.
This is also a document if you write.
I think that the ktubah is also called shtar ktubah.
Shtar ktubah. Okay. Yeah, could be.
Also, shtar, that when you're going to
like a guarantee.
Yeah, so it's in Mea Shearim there is a you go for a special chanut. And they have this particular shtar for the Arabim.
Okay.
You can't take a stamp paper. You need this special paper, special document that it's shtar for the Arabim.
Yofi. Okay, so here we're talking about a case where someone comes to court with a shtar, with a document. Document here is like a proof of title, proof of ownership. He's got a shtar, proof of ownership. And a chazaka. What's a chazaka?
3 times, probably.
It usually means 3 times something. But what was it? Chazaka. Do you know what chazaka is? Not an azaka. An azaka is the siren. Here we're talking about chazaka. Not to get confused. Did I just hear an azaka or a chazaka?
Azaka
is the siren. And the is the siren. The chazaka is what we're talking about. Chazaka, what's a chazaka?
It's coming from the word chazak.
Number one. Chazak. And chazak means to be strong.
Strong.
Right.
And the idea is that it's become a pattern.
Yes, sir.
It's become a pattern, and now when somebody comes, so like when an ox going and beat 2 times, 3 times, now it's a pattern. So now you're saying official that is.
So we can say there's not really a similar word in English, but you could say that it's an established pattern. An established pattern. Now, chachamim, but it's a Jewish law thing. Yeah, I don't know, it's come over to secular law a bit, maybe.
Like modus operandi.
Yeah, but it's here, a chazaka in Jewish law has the status of proof. Something that's happened 3 times, there's an argument in the Gemara where it needs to be 2 or 3, but we can hold by 3. When something's happened 3 times, it's called a chazaka, and it's an assumption, it's a legal presumption. It now has the status of a legal presumption. Something that's happened 3 times. So we saw, where do we see an example? With an ox. An ox that gores 3 times now has a legal presumption that it's a goring ox. Therefore, you have to pay full price if it does it again. Right? Because it's got a hazaka on it that it's going to gore.
So you had to take
special doubt, but it's a strong enough proof. If you haven't got any. A hazaka wins if you haven't got any proof to the contrary, usually.
That's why the owner has to take special precautions.
Right, that's why you have to, because there's already a legal presumption on it. So here we're talking about a hazaka. Here, what's a hazaka? Here's a different type of hazaka. Here, the case we're talking about is a hazaka on land. Someone has a hazaka that he owns the land. What's a general case of a hazaka? General case of a hazaka on land is I don't have proof of ownership, but I've got a legal presumption of ownership. How? I haven't got a shtar.
This presumption?
What is presumption. Good question. In Hebrew, presumption. Nechshav, kilu nechshav kaze. Considered to be, if I don't have a shtar, but I've been there, like squat in secular law, it's certainly in the UK, I don't say in the US.
Oh, they have it here.
Squatters' rights.
They have it here, because I remember signing contracts. They have a whole section of that for renting.
So you don't stay, right? So they don't, you don't get to stay, right? Because legal presumption of ownership can occur. We're talking about Jewish legal presumption, not the secular court's legal presumption. There may be different rules, right? Could be like in English law, people say possession is
9/10.
Right. Actually, it's a legal presumption that whoever's holding it, it's his. You've got to prove otherwise now, right? Unless you can prove otherwise, he gets to keep it. Right? You can't take it out of his possession. He's got a legal presumption of ownership. How did he get that? Well, the fact that he's got it, that's it. He doesn't have anything else. He happens to be holding it right now. Right? You want to take it off him. You want to win the case. So you now need to bring proof. Because he's got the legal presumption, but it's in his hands. Right? So in land, how do you get a legal presumption? According to Jewish law, not stamp secular law. According to Jewish law, you get a chazakah after 3 years. If you can show that you've been there for 3 years, uninterrupted possession, then you've got hazakah of ownership. In Jewish law now, talking Jewish legal law, we're not looking at how that is or why is that, in a different masechet.
Then how do we deal with the Arab squatters?
No, don't worry about that. Right? So a person who's got a hazakah needs, he can show for 3 years. I've got no document, you're right. It could be that he actually owns it. It could be. But he's been in his family. Who knows when it was, when I bought the land? I know, 20 years ago, 200 years ago. I have a document that shows this is my house. But what can I show you? Well, for sure I've been here more than 3 years. Just ask the neighbor. Ask him, right? Ask whoever you like. I've been here 3 years. I can bring plenty of witnesses to show that I've been here 3 years. So I've now got a legal presumption of ownership. You can't throw me out of this land unless you've got a shtar that holds up in court that says it's actually my land. If I can show a shtar that says, fine, you might have been here 3 years. Very nice that you've been here 3 years, but this is my land. Thank you very much. Belong to mine. And here's my shtar, which says, number 22, Rechav Shiftei Yisrael. Belongs to my family. Here's the deed of title. Right? You're right, you've been there, but get out of here. It's my land. So a shtar is going to beat a chazakah.
What is this? The
title. Rishum Shal.
A tab.
Yeah, shtar is stronger. Hazaka is just, you've got no proof. Hazaka is, in the case of land, that you've been there 3 years to get a hazaka. Right?
But for a shtar, you have to register as a land registry.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as a land registry. In the old days, there's no central land registry, but everyone had a title document that was signed and witnessed in front of two witnesses that this was your piece of land, that you bought it. Is a dispute that you say you bought it from so-and-so, and he says, no, it's mine. Or he says, I bought it from you. I bought this land from you 5 years ago. Right? You sold it to me. Here's the document. Then I went on a trip. And meanwhile, you carried on living there. I let you rent for the last 4 years. You've been renting from me. I bought it from you. I let you rent. I let you stay on. And I want to kick you out. And you say, no, it's mine. I say, wait a minute, you sold it to me. Look, here's the document. You sold it to me. What are you talking about? You're right, you've been living there, but you're renters. You're not. It's my land. Yeah, right? Yeah. How do I know if you're renting only or it's actually your land? Because I've got a document that says this is my land and you're renting. Or I've got a document that says you're renting from me. We signed a lease agreement. It said you're renting and you agree that I'm renting from you. This is your land and you signed it. This is proof. Right? So you've got Hazaka that you've been there 3 years. Very nice. You've got Hazaka, you've been there 3 years, but I've got the proof that you're renters. Get out of here.
You can buy a house with land after 100 years, go back to the government.
Yeah, unless you renew.
Let's say you live 99 years.
You know, so when you renew it,
after 100 years, go back to the government.
It does in theory, but you have the right to renew it. Hmm? You have the right to take it to renew the lease, to have a new lease again, to renew and renew and renew. In theory, yeah, they can take it back, but in practice, they can't.
So it means you're not buying land for only farming.
It means that the ultimate land always rests with the government. In theory, it always belongs to them. But in practice, it doesn't work that way because they can't just take people's land. People wouldn't allow it. So they practice, they actually just give you a new one, they give you a new one.
They do it like every 10. We had just renew ours. It's like 5 shekels, something like that.
How about I get to renew?
Yeah.
So they have to. Yeah. So you're Tov. So Tov, we'll see tomorrow what that case is. So that's the background
of the schedule.